Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for joining us on our call. I hope you're all doing well. And this is the kind of a combined call because Madeline and I left California in early November, and we're still not back, actually. We're now in Kauai. And so we were not able to have a World Peace Diet Circle call in November like we normally do on the third Thursday. And so then we were going to have it on the third Thursday of December, but that was also not possible because we were giving a lecture on the Big Island. So we're now on the fourth Thursday of December, which is December 22nd, 2016. And a lot has happened in the last since our last call, which was back in October, on the third Thursday of October, like normal, which was the 20th of October. So in the meantime, we have had some wonderful adventures that I'd like to share with you. And in China, in Taiwan, Singapore, Vietnam as well. Those are the main places, but also we've been now in the Hawaiian Islands for, I think, about 3 weeks on the Big Island, Maui, and now Kauai. And just really so inspired and grateful to be part of this movement of compassion for all teens and to see all the progress that's being made in spite of the enormous resistance by virtually every possible force in our outer world and very often our inner world as well. So and we've met a lot of fantastic people. Also, I want to share some of those things with you. So for this particular call, we will be joined, I promise, to Mark Stroud, who many of you know. He's a longtime World Peace Diet facilitator. This is the very first class course that we ever offered way back in, I think it was maybe around 2006 or 2007, and that was in Michigan. So he has been with us all these years, and he's going to be talking to us pretty soon about the new Montessori school that's vegan in Cincinnati, and then we'll be speaking about our adventures in the Pacific, Asian, Pacific region, and then we also want to open it up for any questions you may have. We will not be able to go longer than an hour and 10 minutes. It should be plenty of time, but we have another obligation to be speaking on the radio here, the community radio, Kauai KKCR, which is Kauai Community Radio, in Princeville, Kauai, at in about a little over an hour. So we have a nice hour, and so also just think if you have any questions or if you'd like to address. If you do, then press *6 on your phone, and that will effectively indicate to me that you would like to say something, and I'll see it here, and then I'll get to unmute your phone individually, and you can speak as long as you say whatever you'd like, and we can all hear you. Right now, you are all muted automatically when you join the call. All right, so yeah, we're going to, I think, just go ahead and jump in. And so what we normally do at the beginning of our call is take a few minutes to just tune in. So I'd like to go ahead and do that. And we're now ourselves, where we are, looking out over the ocean in Kauai to one side of these incredibly dramatic sea mountains behind us. We're at a, I guess it's a woman's house. She owns 3 acres, but she wants to make it into a community. So I think there's probably about 20 people who live here. They're basically work, study, scholarships, mostly young people, but some older people. They're gardening and working all that on this land and working to make it a community. So we're here. We were offered the space as part of our accommodations, so we came here to Kauai to give lectures promoting vegan living, partially sponsored by the Vegetarian Society of Kauai, we used to call it Buddha. And so this is really a nice spot, so I thought we'd go this. All right, so wherever you happen to be, if you're driving or whatever, of course, don't close your eyes, but if you it's comfortable, let's just turn our attention within. And remembering our connection with our beautiful planet Earth, we call Earth, and with the infinite nurturing power that the Earth represents, and we see manifest all around us and also within us, within every cell of our being. Giving thanks for this power and also the power above us of heaven, of the infinite creative energy and wisdom that lives also within us, source of life here, and feeling our connection with each other, those of us who are on this call, the community of Wopi's Diet facilitators who have gone through the Wopi's Diet training and are working to help raise awareness in our society. So we give thanks for each other. We give thanks for all the efforts that are being made in order to help raise awareness on this planet, to question ongoing violence towards animals and ecosystems and hungry people, future generations, workers, ourselves, animal agriculture by domination and exploitation of other beings and each other. And we give thanks knowing that we are part of an awakening on this beautiful planet, that our human consciousness is maturing beyond the old narrative of might makes right. And so we give thanks knowing that we're part of a web of light, a web of aspiration, a web of inspiration, and that we are together making a positive difference in the healing of our world. We just feel our connection with each other, with everyone who's gone before us, thinking of all the countless people in the past decades and centuries who have planted seeds of introspection, kindness, and mercy, caring, justice, equality, and freedom, understanding and wisdom, founded traditions to help promote wisdom. Perhaps they even been from the unknown to the outside world, but have done the inner work, lived their lives as examples. We're connected to all of these pioneers in the past, in the present, and in the future. So full stream of life and awareness we're part of. So thanks for this, and know that every effort that we make does make a difference in me. Not seeing that way at the moment, but that every effort that we make to help raise awareness and to help purify our own consciousness does make a difference in the big picture, that no effort is ever lost. But as we continue to plant seeds of awakening, we can transform not only ourselves, but also our shared experience together through the inner work and also the outer work. All right, so thank you very much. And yes, here we are. This is a precious opportunity to be together. I really apologize that we had to miss one session. I think in the over five years of doing this, we never missed a month where we did a Wopi Sat Circle, so that was really the first time that it was literally impossible to do it from over there, so I couldn't make calls or anything. So now we're back in the saddle again. I shouldn't say that. Probably not very right. But we're back on the path together and walking along here and sharing ideas. So remember, as I say, press star 6 if you have a question. And I see that Mark Stroud is here. I'm not really sure. I can see a whole list of people. I do see that our dear friend, Grace, has pressed star 6. So I'm going to go ahead before we dive in. Go ahead and just unmute Grace's phone.
Oh, good evening. Great blessings.
Yay! Let me, one second here.
Great. Are you there, Grace?
I am.
Great. So it might be good if you turn off your speakers, maybe. I think I can hear a little echoing on the computer, something like that.
Yeah, sorry about that. And actually, I raised my hand because I was listening. It sounds like maybe there's something wrong with your microphone. We were listening on one phone. I'm here with my friend Mark, or Mr. Andrews, just come.
How are you?
Oh, so maybe you're right. Maybe I wasn't speaking loud enough. Is this better now? This is probably better. I just realized I was maybe too far from the microphone when I was speaking before. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so sorry. I'm so sorry, but yeah, we were trying to listen on speakerphone, and I didn't bring my extra little speaker to plug into the phone, so we were trying to listen over the phone, sharing the call together, and then I was like, well, maybe it's his phone, so then I called on my phone, but it still sounded like it was very difficult to hear you, but I'm sure it was a fabulous meditation. I closed my eyes, and I was with you in spirit, and I'm certain that you were guiding us very well. Yes, please.
So
thank you so much.
All
let
right.
you get on with your business. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Grace. Yeah. All right. So, yes, I apologize, everyone. I think I had a setting not correctly on my phone, so perhaps it was difficult to hear me. So hopefully this is better now, and I'm not sure how that meditation went. It sounded like it didn't go too well, at least for Grace. But I will maybe just repeat just very briefly what I said, and then we'll go ahead. And I'm still a little bit waiting for Martha. I'm also just excited to talk about the trip we had to China and some of the insights that emerged. I'm also writing a short article that I'm going to be putting up on the website, which will have some pictures and things which will be helpful too. And also, of course, if anyone has any questions about it, feel free to press *6. So, yeah, as far as the meditation, you know, I always do this at the beginning, but I was especially just inviting us to connect with heaven, the infinite creative power, earth, the sustaining power, and the whole web of pioneers, of kindred spirits in the past, in the present, and in the future who are working together with us and the effort to make a world of peace and freedom for all living beings. So that was the basic thrust of our meditation, and knowing that not only are the forces for healing our world living within every cell of our being and for healing ourselves also, but that we are sharing a space together with others, that more and more people are awakening to the beauty of this earth and the abundance of this earth and the deep truth that we are designed, essentially, at a deep level to thrive and cooperate here, and that we can each one of us contribute to the healing of not only our own lives and our relationships, but also to our world, and that we can each find a way to contribute to the healing through the vegan movement or whatever, however we're called. I think personally that the movement to help liberate animals from human abuse is the very root of the problems that we're having. And then the other point I was emphasizing in the meditation is that no effort we ever make is ever lost. So we give thanks for this interconnectedness that we have, for the efforts that are being made and have been made and will be made by so many other manifestations of human consciousness, and that we are connected with each other and with all these others in the spirit of altruism, kindness, and love, and caring, and benevolence, and goodwill for all living beings. And so it is. Okay, great. Thanks so much, Grace, for helping to make sure that that didn't get lost. So, greetings, everyone. And I'd like to go ahead and Mark, there's a number of people whose names I don't see. It just says wireless caller, so I'm not sure, but I think you're probably not here yet. But anyway, I'll go ahead and unmute you when you're here. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. And the basic idea I'd like to share with you right now is that we have recently returned from a lecture tour to China, Taiwan, and Singapore, and it was very inspiring. There were just many, many moments of that were, you know, kind of take your breath away in terms of seeing the real depth and the breadth of the vegan movement in these other countries, especially, I guess, in China and Taiwan, somewhat in Vietnam, also in Singapore. I mean, Vietnam and Singapore, especially Singapore, is a more westernized country. Vietnam is actually, in a sense, less westernized. But we were really very busy. Basically, what happened, I flew from San Francisco to Beijing back on November 8th, and Madeline flew to Basel. So I was on my own. She was in Switzerland helping to take care of her mother, who had just moved from her apartment at the age of 97 years old to an Altersheim, which means old folks' home, in nearby in Switzerland. And so I was on my own in mainland China, and then after 2 weeks of giving lectures there, Madeline flew to Taiwan, and we met. And I flew to Taiwan, so we met there after 2 weeks. So I thought it would be great to talk a little bit about the events that we experienced in that I experienced in mainland China, and if we have time, maybe going a little bit into the Taiwan events as well. Typically, our calls for the third Thursday, which of course is this month because we had events last week. This is the fourth Thursday. Lasts about an hour to an hour and a half, and today it'll go just a little more than an hour because I have a radio interview at a quarter past the hour, next hour. So landing in Beijing, basically I knew it was going to be happening when I arrived in Beijing, but the fellow who set up the tour in China is a really energetic, passionate vegan, a man named Dr. Li Yu, Yu being his family name. In China, they say Yu Li, and he has a PhD in physics. He's also very well educated in nutrition. He's gone through the T. Colin Campbell, as well as the PCRM trainings, and has been to the United States quite a few times. His English is pretty good, and so he also owns a vegan restaurant in Beijing called the Vegan Hut, and. Basically, you know, he met me at the airport, and it was, from the very beginning, it was very ceremonial in the sense that there were a lot of people there at the airport with this big red banner welcoming me, two red banners actually, very large, you know, like, I don't know what, like 15 feet long by, you know, 1.5 feet high or something, it was long red banners, and lots of flowers and welcoming and all that, and so, and lots of gifts, you know, fruits, and I've never seen such a huge bowl, you know, basket of persimmons. So they were very sweet. They got me. It was late. At that point, it was like 8 o'clock or something at night. So took me to the hotel, and then the next day we did a little, you know, seeing, and that was actually interesting. I went to the Tiananmen Square and the Forbidden City morning afternoon, and then had the first event in the evening, a lecture with a concert, but there was a piano there. I mean, it's just a little bit of music I was doing. It was a kickoff event. It was very well attended. There were several hundred people there. And we had initial problems with the translator. Should have been really good, but he wasn't really up to it. He just had difficulty, so he was replaced by another woman. And I was immediately impressed with how the Chinese people are really tuned in to these ideas, at least the people who are attending the lectures. I mean, you know, as a speaker, speaking in Europe, the United States, and Australia, New Zealand, you know, quite a few places, it's not that difficult to see how well people are getting things. When they speak a different language, it's a little more difficult, but I could just see by their faces and so forth and their applause, actually. They would applaud quite a bit. That they were really kind of very, very interested, and then afterwards there was this whole torrent of people that wanted to need to sign books. The World Peace Diet has just been relatively recently released in simplified Chinese. It was already released a few years ago in traditional Chinese, which is used in Taiwan. But in simplified Chinese, which is used in mainland China, it was new, I guess maybe 6 or 8 months ago. So we had to run, and Dr. Yuli was great. He had a special print run. He worked with the printers and told them, look, you know, we've got these lectures, you know, print. I think he printed 10,000 books just for the lecture tour. And he's very enthusiastic that the World Peace Diet will sell 100,000 copies at least. And so we got off to a great start. You know, basically every single lecture from then on, I did another lecture the following night, and also in Beijing. We spent the following day in, I think it's the Great Wall of China, and that's a very interesting thing. I could talk a long time about that. Just the basic idea is that, you know, when you go to this Great Wall and just see the enormous, inconceivable amount of effort that it took these people to build this immensely long, high, thick wall over mountains that are not easy, and to bring and to just lay brick by brick by brick. I mean, it took, like, I'm sure, just hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of workers. It's an amazing amount of work. And then what were they protecting? So what was the point? You know, that's the question. And I think it really does tie right into Chapter 2 of the World Peace Diet, which talks about the devastating effects of the herding culture, because what they were trying to protect themselves from basically was Genghis Khan, or I guess Genghis Khan, as he's now preferably called by scholars, and the marauding Mongol hordes of were on horseback. They were herders who had cattle, and they would they went all over, not only China but Central Asia, all the way to Europe, Russia, and just horrifically violent people that would destroy towns, burn everything, kill all the people, and go move on. I mean, it's just a really very devastating force that I guess we've kind of forgotten about in some ways. But that was the reason, and they want to protect their own civilization, their gardens. If you have a chance to read the book Animal Oppression and Human Violence by David, what's his name? Anyway, David Nyberg. David Nyberg. Our new book, Circles of Compassion, I have an essay by David Nyberg. But he really takes that chapter 2 in the World Peace Diet, and a few years later, just recently, he wrote a book that sort of unpacks everything I was saying in there and really shows how devastating animal agriculture actually was historically to the civilizations that were based more on plant-based agriculture and were less violent. So anyway, visiting the Great Wall was very sobering, and then also visiting the Summer Palace was very interesting and sobering, because, you know, reading, seeing these amazing, beautiful, extravagant architectural wonders, and also reading about how in the 1860s they were completely burned and destroyed by the British and French forces, and then rebuilt later. How China was invaded not only by the Mongols, but then also later by the Europeans, and the sort of the violence that they've endured at the hands of others over the years, and that kind of, to me, provided a bit of a backdrop to everything that I was experiencing, actually, and the interest that people have in China in peace. It's very deep, I think. You know, they've been invaded, they understand the suffering that entails on some level. So the second evening was a really excellent presentation again. I mean, in terms of it was a much larger auditorium. It was packed. It was a lot more people. I think probably close to 500 people. Beautiful big white grand piano, and At this time, it was interesting. There was a professional translator, a woman. These were both professionals. But she also had trouble. She would write everything down, and then there was always a delay. She was still, after when I finished saying a few sentences, then she would keep writing, and then she would speak her sentences. So it was, again, the Dr. Yu was just really frustrated with the translators that we had and wondering what we were going to do, because we had this very intense schedule of about, I think, 22 lectures in 12 different cities over a two-week period. So we were going to be flying every single day. So so that was, kind of an issue. But anyway, we flew off the next night. Actually, it was, I won't go into all the details, but it was not easy. We had, I had another lecture at his restaurant to the expats in the area, in Beijing, a lot of Americans that are there, that are kind of vegetarian, vegan-oriented, probably, it was probably like 25 people or so, but we had a nice dinner, and then I gave a lecture. He served free food to everybody, and so I learned more about China from their perspective. That was really the only time I had a chance to be with non-Chinese people. I was right there in the beginning in Beijing at that lecture. And then the irony was we were going to go to a train station just south of Beijing and fly from there to Guangzhou, because Dr. Yu thought it would be better strategically to do that. And so the train left at about 11:30 at night, or midnight, just before midnight, actually. And so by the time we got there after my lecture, because there was a delay in the taxi driver, he kind of made a mistake, we actually missed the train. So then suddenly he had to make a lot of phone calls to the airlines, and so we drove back to his restaurant at 12:30 in the morning or 1 in the morning, and we just slept on the benches in his restaurant for about 3 hours until about 4 o'clock in the morning, and then we got up and took a taxi to the airport and flew to Guangzhou, because we had a very intense schedule in Guangzhou. Guangzhou is a huge city. It used to be Canton. These are gigantic cities, Beijing also. And also, it's quite amazing to see the terrible air pollution in the cities of China. I mean, that was one of the most obvious things. It was just always gray. And the smell, slight smell of something a little bit acidic. It's better than it was, apparently, I've been told, but it's still pretty bad. And so we did media interviews in Guangzhou, did a lecture presentation in the afternoon, and had dinner and had a whole panel. He liked to do these multiple, long events with, I'd give a lecture. He would usually give a lecture also on the nutritional benefits of veganism, then have local people from the community who had vegan or plant-based businesses also. We'd have a panel together. We did that also in Beijing, so we'd have these panels. That was very interesting. And that vegan restaurateurs and people with food businesses, filmmakers, educators, they were, so it was great. I mean, I get to really see there's a lot happening there, and to meet the people and to go to their factories, go to the vegan restaurants. We were always going to vegan restaurants. And so we went to a vegan restaurant in Guangzhou, actually, that I remember very well. It had these beautiful greeneries growing everywhere, with the roots hanging down everywhere and the leaves hanging down everywhere. It was like being in a jungle. And the woman who was the owner, she kind of showed us around the place. And, of course, it was so funny because this is also indicative, but Dr. Yu said, there's MSG in this food. And the waitress said, no, we don't use any MSG. And then he said, I think there's MSG. And so she went back and she talked to the waiter and came out triumphantly saying, no, there's no MSG. And then he said, I own a restaurant. I know this got MSG in it. And so then the waiter came out, the head chef came out, and they had a little discussion in Chinese. And then I don't know exactly what they were saying, but I can kind of figure it out that they were talking about MSG. And so then the head chef brought out this bottle that was the sauce that they used in some of their dishes, and sure enough, there was MSG in the sauce, So you know, the moral of the story, according to Dr. Yu, was that it's almost impossible in China to get really clean food. It doesn't have any preservatives or MSG. It's very difficult. Even in pretty conscious restaurants that are vegan, it's very difficult. So we were kind of on the alert after that. I was, because I don't like eating preservatives and MSG and all that stuff. And that's one of the challenges. There was never any brown rice. It's always white rice. The food I was eating over there the whole time, it was always vegan, of course, but it was really different in the sense that a lot of times I had no idea what I was eating, in the sense that I had never eaten anything like that in my life before. Mainly lots of different funguses and mushrooms, all kinds. Monkey brain, I remember, fungus, and calf liver fungus and mushroom, and many other types of mushroom. They really love mushrooms. So I learned to just say, all right, I'll eat pretty much anything here. But all in all, I have to say, I was never sick or anything. I always was healthy. And the problem was just the very intense flight schedule. So we actually had 2 days in Guangzhou, which was kind of nice. I did some a little bit of time in the afternoons to do some sightseeing at some of the Buddhist temples. Gave lectures in the afternoons and evenings in Guangzhou at two different places. And mainly a lot of times the lectures were at these, they're kind of like centers they have in China of traditional Chinese culture, like Chinese Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism. They're all very friendly to veganism because it's a tradition. It's considered a traditional wisdom teaching. And vegetarianism and veganism. So, and since there was never any dairy products in China traditionally, when they say their word for vegetarian, which is I think suma, really means vegan in the sense that it means no meat, dairy, or eggs. That's because they didn't eat dairy. Maybe no meat, maybe a little bit of eggs. So we had to deal with coming up with a word that we could use, because pure vegetarian means a plant-based diet without any onion or garlic, because that's really how most of the Buddhists live. It's vegetarian without onions and garlic and leeks, which are considered black foods, which are not supposed to be eaten by monks and nuns because they're considered too strong and they might cause, I guess, undue pressure, perhaps sexually and other ways, for people who just are meditating all the time. So that's pure vegetarian, so they use the word strict vegetarian in Chinese. We started introducing the word vegan a little bit, but what Dr. Yu thought would be a great alternative to this, all this confusion of what you say, because Chinese language, they don't like to borrow words, really. They don't like to say vegan, you know, like how we say it, like they do in German and Italian and Spanish and many other languages, just borrow the word vegan. They don't like to do that in Chinese, so he was quite often saying, and I started saying it too, actually, instead of saying a vegan diet, saying a world peace diet. You know, that's kind of like the new word to say, instead of saying a vegan diet in Chinese, to say a world peace diet. And in a way, it's a nice idea because it sort of reminds people of why we're doing it. We're doing it for world peace, for animals, humans, ecosystems, for the whole system. And I have no idea if that will stick, but there's quite a lot of interest over there in the World Peace Diet and in World Peace Diet as a movement, as a way of living, like eating a World Peace Diet. And, you know, apart from my book, just a World Peace Diet. And I think there's quite a bit of energy for maybe having a World Peace program, a World Peace institute of some kind, that they would like to get going, because it seems like there's this whole idea of doing courses and learning and understanding at a deeper level, you know, how all these ideas fit together. And I realize in China people love to take courses, so I'm in touch with them about that a little bit as well. But anyway, I won't go all too long here about this. I just basically, Guangzhou was very interesting, gigantic city, a lot of air pollution. At one point we stayed in this little kind of bed and breakfast. At one point we took kind of a wrong turn early in the morning to get to a taxi and down a little alleyway, and I saw dogs in cages, and I asked the woman, And she said, yeah, they're either for sale for food or they're for sale to be bought as pets. And she wasn't really sure. But I remember seeing this in Korea. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not saying that, but I do. That kind of sticks out of my mind in Guangzhou. But anyway, it was really great to be at these cultural traditional centers. And the thing that I could really base my talks on were the idea that there's a three dimensions to veganism in China. Number one, the roots of veganism on planet Earth, I believe, are in China. I think, you know, veganism is basically a movement that emerged first in China, probably about, I would say, 1,200 years ago, probably in the Tang Dynasty of China. We had the very first really vegan movement on planet Earth. It certainly didn't happen in India because they've had, unless it was, you know, way back. But they've always had dairy as part of their vegetarianism, so they were always, in a sense, imprisoning cows and stealing their milk as part of their vegetarianism. Even the yogis and the Buddhists very often were doing that. But in China, they didn't do that. And so in Tang Dynasty China, when the great Zen temples emerged and the Chan Buddhist monasteries emerged, kind of blending Indian Buddhism with the native Taoism of China, it was totally what we would call vegan, in the sense that there was no meat, dairy, or eggs allowed in the food because that was considered violent, you know, breaking the precept of non-killing and non-stealing. And so we see it even, and then in the Song Dynasty, following the Tang Dynasty, when there was this great flowering of Buddhist culture in China, and this would have been, I guess, in like around 1200, the Tang Dynasty, I think, was around 700, 800. Bodhidharma came up from India, 600, something like that. So 700, 800s, 900s, the, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th centuries, we have the Tang Dynasty, and then followed by the Song Dynasty, where it got really much more popular. And then the vegan cuisine for the very first time emerged on planet Earth that we see today, in the sense that there were, for the very first time, these monks were just eating rice and vegetables, basically, and maybe a little tofu also. But when these visiting officials would come and the wealthy donors would come to the temples, it was very important for the monks, especially during the Song Dynasty, when they were building larger, more impressive monasteries, they really wanted funding for their movement and for their building projects. And so they would serve these elaborate feasts for the wealthy Buddhists who would come to visit the temples. And the monks learned and started experimenting with and learning how to prepare vegan, you know, pork and vegan chicken and vegan fish of various kinds. And you know, they would experiment with it because the officials liked eating pork and fish and chicken, and they didn't have beef back then, I don't think, but those kinds of things. And so they would make something that tasted the same to please the rich people coming to visit. And so we really had, for the first time, I think, the sort of the faux meat phenomenon arising in China probably 1,000 years ago. And this has really, it's really been going strong ever since, at least in the Buddhist temples. I mean, I know in the Cultural Revolution just recently, in, you know, 1950s, I think it took a big hit. But the basically the cultural associations where I was speaking, they remember all this. That's my feeling. You know, they remember all this. They know all this, and that this is part of their society. So that's one of the dimensions. The second dimension, of course, is that the Chinese society is very interested in science, and there's a very strong science, sort of dimension to their education system, and science is quite clear today, of course, that it's not a good idea to kill animals for food, from the environment, for our health, and all these other reasons. So there's quite a lot of good, solid emphasis, I think, in China against eating animal foods based on science. And then thirdly, government. You know, China is the government It's pretty well known. I think a few months ago, the Chinese government came out with a sort of an official proclamation mandating that everybody reduce the amount of meat they're eating, to try to cut back on meat and dairy consumption by 50% because of global climate destabilization and also droughts and the depletion of aquifers and water and, just in general. As well as, I think, probably the disease that eating animal foods is causing the population. So they always loved, and I remember when I was giving my lectures, if I said that I really appreciated that the Chinese government was so wise that they knew to encourage everyone to do the best they can to reduce meat consumption, and I wished that the U.S. government was so wise, and I usually got quite a bit of applause when I said that, that the U.S. government would be as wise as the Chinese government, at least in that respect. So that was all. The other thing in Guangzhou that I just should mention is that was where we were met at the airport in the morning there with the usual lots of flowers and banners and everything. And there was this very bright light there, a young woman named Jade, and she spoke to me in English. That was just like someone from the United States speaking. I mean, she had no accent, and she's a Chinese woman born and raised in China, but she lived in the United States for a few years, and then one of those people who has a gift for just, not having a Chinese accent when she speaks English. So she's a vegan, and so she did the interpreted for me on the stage. And she was fantastic. And Dr. Yu was so thrilled. She said, "This is an angel. We needed a translator, and now we've got Jay." And so he paid to have her take every flight with us, stay in the hotel, just basically be with us for the whole rest of the tour. And she was fantastic, actually, I have to say. She was great. She could stand up right next to me, and I would say a few sentences, and she would jump right in, and she was very animated and seemed to be really excellent, which was a bit of a problem. I've seen that problem with a lot of interpreters are trained that they shouldn't have any feelings. They should just be objective and just sort of give the words, and it kind of loses a lot when they do that. So she was really great. So that was it, and I'll just give a very brief thing here. I don't want to go too long, but Guangzhou, we did lectures there. I also gave that was the one time I gave a whole evening. I just did a concert, and where they had this beautiful German piano. I mean, it was incredible, and all these people came. I mean, that was one of the things I really loved in China, was every time I went into a lecture hall, and we would very often show up after the people were already there, there would be packed. There would be 500 people or 400 people, and the room would be just full. And they would be really just so excited, and that's how it was at this concert. It was the same thing. It was a beautiful piano. And then the next day we flew to Chengdu, and again we had media interviews. It was so neat to be interviewed by some of these people, some of the local radio, some of the local television, also some of the local internet, and just to hear like this woman, it was so funny, these two women. A woman said, "I'm with such and such an online service," and she said something like, "They have 150 million, followers, or some ridiculous amount. They don't have Facebook, yet. They have something called WeChat." But anyway, I was thinking, "Gosh, 150 million! Holy cow!" Because they have 1.3 billion people there, so I mean, it's just the numbers of people in China are so staggering. And she said, this will go out to millions of people. And then the other woman had something like, 20 million people that were followers of her, or her organization, I guess, or her news service. So I feel really great that I was able to get interviews with these people who really reach many millions of people at these interviews that were set up also. In Chengdu, that was amazing. We were at a culture, we did two different events, one at a vegan restaurant that was affiliated with one of these Chinese cultural associations, and then we went over to another place that was affiliated with this art academy run by a famous artist and calligrapher who created a calligraphy just for me and for the World Peace Diet movement, which was really this whole very ceremonial thing. And it was just, for me, it was just beautiful how the people were. You know, they're so respectful. They were always gassho, and you know, always dong with both hands together. And whenever whenever you would give somebody something, or whenever they would give something to me, I learned this. You know, you never give like a business card or a piece of paper or a book to somebody with one hand. That would be kind of very sort of disrespectful in a sense, or kind of mindless. You always use both hands to present it, and you always reach out both hands to receive it. And I got into the habit, even like something like a little business card. You always use both hands to give the business card and put out both hands to receive the business card. You know, and there's something about it. It takes more effort, but you're kind of, you know, for me, I was being more conscious when I was doing that. And it was really a nice touch, I thought. So that you know, this was just part of what happened there. Then we, and this is again, though, another city that was completely, you couldn't see more than, you know, a few hundred meters. The air pollution was so severe. We flew then to Kunming, which is up in Yunnan province, which is up in the mountains. And yay, we were out of all the pollution. There was blue sky. It was really the only time I was in China where I actually had blue sky and got some sun on my skin. It felt really great. We went to this temple of the three unifications, which was basically a temple based on the unification of Buddhism, Taoism, and Confucianism. It was basically Buddhist, and there was a Buddhist teacher there, and he was just the happiest Buddha you can imagine. I mean, as soon as he came out, he was a kind of a middle-aged man, just a very beautiful guy with this big, infectious smile. He was just always smiling, this big smile. And there was a lot of people there. I mean, the place was packed, and they were playing. You know, they had this temple, you know, sound system going through all these, you know, probably 30 buildings, and they were playing my CD, you know, animal songs was playing in the background. They had all these posters and flyers everywhere, and so we had a panel, like things like that. We had a panel discussion with him and me and I think Dr. Yu and one other person, and then lecture and dinner and lunch and then a dinner. And it was all very traditional, vegan, very pro-vegan, everything, and a huge crowd. I mean, the place was packed, and it was just enormously inspiring to see the Buddhist temples, you know, going strong there in this area, that anyone can go there and do retreats if they want. They had built these sort of apartment buildings adjacent that people could go and do retreats. He told me, if I ever want to come to China and just go there and just stay for a month and do a retreat in silence or whatever, well, no problem. You know, you can always do that. And this is a really beautiful area that's outside of the cities. It's up in the mountains. So it was very inspiring, I have to say, to see the beauty of this place, and just the food. It was so good, and the atmosphere was great. They had, well, I played some music on this digital piano that they brought into the lecture hall, and they had these dancers who were Zen practitioners who did a Zen dance. It was very interesting. I don't know if you can imagine a Zen dance, but it's kind of like Tai Chi. There was a man and two women, and they moved very, very gracefully while I played, and it was kind of like they were doing Tai Chi while I was playing, sometimes slow, sometimes more quickly, and it was very interesting. But anyway, and then we went from there, we flew to Xi'an, which is a famous place where they have the warriors and all that, and they have some famous temples there. We visited the temples, I spoke at a university, it went really well, but it had a panel and all that, and the next day we flew to Taiyuan. Actually, we took a train up to Taiyuan, gave a lecture there at another university. Then we came back to Xi'an and flew to Shenzhen, which is a very large city that just sort of grew up overnight almost. I mean, it's this gigantic city just inside the Chinese border from Hong Kong. Huge city, and it's like one of the biggest cities in the world. It's mainly a lot of people, you know, it's where products are manufactured in gigantic, you know, huge factories. There's no import-export duty there, I guess, something like that. But anyway, there was this one section of Shenzhen where there's lots of old, kind of like hippies and conscious people. It's very interesting, this one little neighborhood area. They had like this health food store and a vegan restaurant. And it's all Chinese. There's no white people, but they're all they're all kind of practitioners of meditation and yoga, and it's a very nice area. I mean, that would have been blue sky, except it was a rainy day. But there was a stream, and there was a mountain, and it was nice. It was nice and clean. Anyway, I gave a lecture there in the morning, and then we drove over the border. We had to, you know, present our passports into Hong Kong, and they had this special festival in Hong Kong, like a veg fest, mainly in honor of me being there. They had me, and then they had all these booths, and then they had food, and they had other speakers, and so like a whole festival, and I spoke there, and then in the afternoon, and then we went back to a Loving Hut restaurant that was in Hong Kong, and I spoke there in the evening, and then we went to the airport and flew to Shanghai. They had this big conference in Shanghai called China Fitness. That's a whole other movement in China based on veganism as kind of like forks over knives, and it's a health thing, and there's some vegan MDs, and so I was the featured speaker there, which was very nice. It was a large event, probably 600 or 700 people, maybe not that many, 500 people probably. It was a full hall, and very, very well, very professional, and a very fancy hotel, lots of professionals, lots of MDs and nurses and health professionals, and very just inspiring to see the movement just booming over there for health. And then we went from there. We drove to a vegan food company that was out in the outskirts of Shanghai. We just sort of outside. We drove there. This woman drove us, and it was great. I mean, it was on a Sunday, and all these people were there. And I said to her, "So why are all these people at your factory on a Sunday? All these workers?" And she said, "They're here because you're here." it was so humbling. I mean, all these workers showed up because they heard that I was going to be there, and they wanted to show me around, and so we put on this white hats and white, gowns, and went through where they make these various vegan, like, crackers and desserts and cookies and baked goods and various kinds of cakes and all these different things, but they're all vegan. And she markets them all over Shanghai, so she has quite a booming business. We also went to another business, and it was in Guangzhou, similar one. They had it was a young vegan company, started by a young vegan couple, and it had expanded so rapidly. I thought it was just a small business he was on the panel with us, on one of the panels in Guangzhou. And we went to their offices, and I just thought it would be some little office, and they have a whole floor of a gigantic office building with probably 40 or 50, I'm not sure how many, but I would say around 40 or 50 employees, and they're marketing basically vegan foods all over China. And then he took us out in his Mercedes. It was very interesting to see the abundance, actually, in certain cases of the vegan movement, how there are really, it's a booming movement in China in many different ways, also from the point of view of health and the environment and animal suffering. And there's people making good livings, making vegan food and promoting vegan products. So then we went to Hangzhou. These were just lectures basically either at hotels or universities. And this is the very end. And this was also very inspiring. In Haining, there was, after I did the lecture, it was late, and we had to fly that night, or early the next morning, like at 4 o'clock, we had to leave to fly to the final destination, which was Xiamen. But they wanted me to go to this restaurant, even though it was 10 o'clock at night. So we went there, and everybody was there, the owners, and we had this, like, little meal. They just wanted to show it to me. And I was really glad they did, because it was very inspiring. It was a restaurant, a local vegan restaurant, created by local people who had just pooled their efforts to do good things in this little city of Haining. And so they were cleaning up trash and helping old people and just helping young people and doing whatever they could to make a better community. And then they decided to make a vegan restaurant, and so they sold shares. Isn't that a great idea? For 10,000 renminbi, which is about $3,000 U.S. dollars, you could buy one share. And no one can buy more than one share. No matter how rich you are, you can only buy one share. So everybody has a sort of a stake in the restaurant. And they have 137 people, they said, have bought shares. So that gave them enough money to buy a restaurant, a building and land, and have a garden and serve meals. And it was a booming restaurant, doing really well with this broad community support, because all these people had bought a share in this restaurant. So that's an idea I think would be great to perhaps could be followed up here in the States. I guess the thing that really that I'm not doing a very good job perhaps communicating is the overall feeling I had in China, which was of cooperation, this kind of cooperation that we really see in the United States, where people really work together and just love being together and just do things together and just connect. And it was just amazing. They're like, it's like a big family. Everybody's just working together in this very, I saw very little conflict. You know, people really seem to love working together. And in the whole country of China, not only in the vegan movement that I was sort of immersed in, but just walking through the city streets and at the airport and everywhere, I have to say, people seem pretty happy. There was a lot of laughing. And, you know, I mean, not everybody. People are kind of walking around like people do in the city. But overall, it seemed like quite a happy overall feeling in general. I mean, the people, there are a lot of people wearing masks, I will say that, because of the air pollution. But even when they would take them off and talk to them, they didn't seem overly stressed. They seemed kind of like that they were doing pretty well. All in all, when I would see them and talk to them or see them talking to each other or whatever. So that was kind of nice to see at least on that level. And the final stop was Xiamen, and gave lectures there, and panel and all that, and then flew to Taiwan. I think maybe I'll stop here because I'm getting tired of talking about all this. Taiwan went really well, Singapore, Vietnam. I'm going to be doing some writing about this as well, but I think overall, there was just this, in Taiwan, it's much more modern and westernized, but has a similar sense of being really, it's probably the most vegan-friendly country in the world, and it's even gotten, from my point of view, even more so. We had huge crowds, people really, really liked it. We went to amazing vegan restaurants, and we had press conferences that were very effectively done. We had on Thanksgiving, this huge vegan turkey. It was a turkey. It was really big. I mean, it was made out of bananas and eggplants and all kinds of, zucchinis and all kinds of different fruits. And very large size. And they had dancers and they had models with vegan costumes on. And so there was this feeling in Taiwan that they really know how to promote the vegan message. And they sent me copies of the print media. I mean, there was literally dozens and dozens of newspapers. First of all, the newspapers in Taiwan covered these, and the radio and television were covering the fact that we were there. We were promoting veganism, and it was just national news. So I think it's just very personally. I feel very inspired by the whole thing. Vietnam was. Just briefly, was a whole different thing because the government is much more clamping down. We couldn't really promote anything. Also, Singapore was similar. They couldn't really promote things in Singapore because you have to have official approval from the government, which can be difficult to get. We still had good-sized turnouts, though. We still had several hundred people at the events, and they went very well. And people were wonderful, really, I have to say. And then our events in Hawaii also, it was kind of like a little bit like that, being back in the USA. Of course, but the events were wonderful on the Big Island. Alessandra just did a great job, and Randall and all the people that worked to help promote things on the Big Island especially, and also in Maui, and now we're on Kauai. So that kind of, I guess, brings us up to speed here. I'm sorry I've just kind of gone on and on here, but I wanted to just tell everybody a little bit while it's relatively fresh in my mind, some of the things that are happening over in China and Southeast Asia in general, in the Pacific. It's beautiful to see. We did two trainings in the Big Island, one on the Big Island, one on Maui. They both went very well. And it's wonderful to welcome some new people into the World Peace Diet facilitator family of people who are, well working together to help spread the vegan message. And so as I said at the very beginning, we have to end a little early today. We normally would go until half past the hour now, or 20 past the hour, but we can only go till about 10 past the hour today because I have a radio interview, and I think we've had a chance for me at least to talk about that. I don't see anybody with the Star 6 being pressed. I see Mark Stoddard is on the call. So I think what I'll do is go ahead and unmute your line, Mark. If you can tell us all a little bit about what's happening in Cincinnati, and I think then we'll probably have to wrap it up for this month and look forward to getting together again on the third Sunday in January. So, Mark, here we go. I just unmuted you, and can you hear me? Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hear me okay?
Yes, very good. Thanks.
Oh, good. So good to hear your voice and to hear such wonderful, just amazing, inspiring stories from China. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I know. I feel so grateful to the people in China. They work so hard to make everything go well, and it's just neat to know that the movement is going on everywhere in the world. There are people who are working to help us question the abuse of animals. So, but let's hear a little bit about you. For those of you who don't know Mark, who may be new, Mark went through the Wolfie Side training way back, the very first one. He's been a Wolfie Side facilitator from the very beginning, and he's the co-founder of the whole movement, I would say, in Cincinnati with World Peace Yoga, the author of World Peace Cookbook that's coming out, and the Jubilee Vegan Festivals, and so many things we've done together with Mark. So now the latest thing, I think, has something to do with a school. You want to tell us a little bit about that, Mark?
Yeah, it's amazing. There were two things that really struck me in what you said about China. One was the level of cooperation among people with the restaurant and people coming together, and the other that you said earlier on about the food that was okay for the Western patrons for the monks and the temples. And so it really fits in what we're doing right now. We're in the process of opening up the first vegan Montessori farm school in the United States, and we're fundraising for that now. And so, of course, being a chef, we always use food. We just had a big event a couple weeks ago.
I'm just interrupting. It's a little hard to hear you. I don't know if you can talk into your phone a little bit better, but basically, I'll just repeat for people what I got, which is that you found it inspiring what I said about China, and you're in the middle of starting the very first vegan Montessori school in Cincinnati, and you're doing the fundraising for that right now. I think you were talking about that. Can you try and say a little bit more, maybe speak as you can, as a little maybe more clearly if it's possible? Great.
Yes. Is this a little better? Is this sounding a little bit better now?
It's a little better. Yeah, it's a little better. Do as best as you can. I think it's a little hard to hear, but yeah, go ahead.
So I think that's the most important thing is that I feel the connection. Well, in addition to the fact that in China, Montessori is also exploding, and so I can only imagine that vegan Montessori, just as we're starting here, would also be very much received in China. So we're in the process of Heart Montessori is the name of the school, and everybody please keep their eye out for different fundraising activities that are going to be going on across the country, really across the world, so we can get this school going and get kids started in this model school so that they're learning sustainability and compassion, right from the very start. So we have 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds starting a lifetime of compassion and empathy and sustainability and self-reliance.
Right. Well, that's great. You know, like I say, it's been a little hard to hear, but I get the general, I think the general gist of it, that, you know, it's very inspiring that you're, and you also, you said something in the beginning about China and the Montessori Did you say there is no monastery in China, or what did you say in the beginning?
No, I was saying that the monastery in China is exploding. My sister and my brother-in-law just spent 2 years in China helping to get a Montessori school started. And one of the students there was a billionaire son that was going to this school. So my point is that as Montessori is booming in China, hopefully we can also get vegan Montessori going, just as we're starting here in the United States. And from what you've experienced, it sounds like
yes,
China is very eager for all of this.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's definitely, you know, like you're saying, having the first vegan Montessori school in Cincinnati, and I can tell people, you know, when we go back to China, we may go back, you know, later, like in 2017, we'll spread the word for sure. And I want to encourage everyone to. Do you have a website for the fundraising thing and all that?
Yes, just it's Heart.
That's better. That's much better.
Yeah, heartmontessori.com, and World Peace Yoga. Either one. It'll take everyone to that spot. Find out more information about it. And thank you so much for sharing and all the work that you and Madeline did over there. Once again, it's just such an opportunity for all of us to come together and cooperate and vote with our dollars and our time and our energy and our talent and make these things happen and shift all of this into a new paradigm.
Exactly. Oh, I'm so glad. Now I can really hear you well. Everybody can hear you, so this is much better.
Oh, good.
Okay. Yeah, this is a lot better. Okay, is there any last thing you want to say? We have about another 2 or 3 minutes. If you want to add anything else, and maybe repeat what you said. Maybe, I don't know if people could hear it earlier. I think we heard about, you just say maybe about the what you said again, what you said earlier about the China and the Montessori and all that. It was a little hard to hear.
I was saying that my sister and her husband are both Montessori teachers and administrators. They just spent 2 years in China assisting two different schools to open in China, and that Montessori is booming in China. So to hear that veganism is booming as well, so the idea that we can marry the two there, just like we're marrying the two here in the United States, and starting a whole new paradigm of kids growing up with empathy and compassion and a different way of learning. It really is heartening to hear this happening. So I'm so glad to hear what your experience was. And it's in my heart to believe that more and more people here in the United States and hearing the stories that you're bringing back are now more willing to cooperate and to assist all of us and assist each other in making these different things happen to change things and move in a different direction.
Right. Great, Mark. Yeah, thanks so much. That's very interesting about your sister, you know, they know about Montessori in China and have been helping support it there and how the vegan movement is growing in both places and to marry them together, right? That's beautiful. All right, well, let's stay in touch, and we really appreciate you coming on the call and telling us about this. And in the email I send out to everyone, I'll definitely make a link to Heart Montessori so people can have a look and find out more. Thank you so much, Mark.
Great.
That's great.
Great to hear your voice. Glad you're back, and talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, so... Well, everyone, it's just about that time. It's been great to have this opportunity to talk a little bit about the experience we had in China. And sometimes I see in the vegan movement there's sort of this unfortunate tendency we have to point our fingers at people in other societies, and sometimes there's a little bit of covert racism in that too, like all their... They'll eat anything, or they eat dogs, or they eat cats, and how terrible they are, how barbaric they are. And I think it's always important to remember that we've got plenty for us to work with here. We're you know, killing a lot of animals over here and abusing them, and that there are people of every race, of every religious tradition, who are people of goodwill and kindness and love, who are working hard to help create a more positive, loving world, and that we should always see people, especially in other cultures, you know, in a positive light, and not, as vegans, not practice any form of discrimination, but to really embrace the beauty of our differences. You know, it's wonderful to see that, and I just feel so grateful to the Chinese people for, in many ways, carrying the vegan message all those centuries when Europe was in the complete dark ages, and continuing to, you know, and bearing the full fury of a lot of violence as well, and still emerging as a country that is working hard, I think, to bring more peace, environmental sustainability, compassion, and love, and health into our world, and that we can work together with them, certainly on the citizen-to-citizen level. So I think I'm going to stop here and just thank all of you for joining us. It's been wonderful to get together like this. This whole call will be archived. It's been recorded. It will be archived, and so you can listen to it later. I'll probably edit it a little bit if there are parts that are hard to hear. I think there might have been at the very beginning. And we'll be meeting again on the first Sunday of January, which is the 15th of January. Madeline and I join our hearts in wishing you all a beautiful holiday season and fantastic, of course, beginning of the next year. There's so many things. Please do check out the World Peace Diet resources. There's so many things on there. There's a lot of study of copies of or links to some of my talks, either videos or articles or lectures or whatever, and Madeline, some of Madeline's as well, and then some of our World Peace Diet facilitators, some of what they've been doing, and then some, of course, of the most recent news and breakthroughs and interesting things that are happening in the world of vegan advocacy. There's just a lot of things that are very helpful to be aware of in the resources for this time. So, much love to you all. Thanks again for your efforts on behalf of compassion and justice for all living beings. During the roughly a month we have between now and then, feel free to contact me if you have any questions or concerns, and we will look forward to being in touch in the future, and thanks again for the love that you have in your hearts and for shining the light that you are into our world. Welcome to all the new people, and welcome back to all of the people who have been on this call in the past. And here is a little song that we can go out on, a song of the caring earth. Enjoy.